Colossians chapter 4. I'm going to finish the book of Colossians this morning. And before we get started into the text, I want to kind of place this in a historical context. Because you'll see why. We believe that Paul wrote this letter, as we've talked about before, around A.D. 60. That's where Paul is sitting in prison, chained to a Roman guard, around A.D. 60. But prior to this, about seven years earlier, about A.D. 53, Paul had begun his longest, most fruitful ministry in one single area. He'd spent 3 years in the city of Ephesus. You read about this in Acts chapter 19, where he shows up in Ephesus, gathers a group of disciples, begins to teach them. The church begins to grow and thrive. And within 3 years, the gospel has gone all throughout this area that we think of nowadays as modern Turkey, but used to be called the area of Asia. It was during Paul's 3 years in Ephesus that fellows like Epaphras headed out from Ephesus and began to evangelize this whole area we call Asia Minor or Asia, or we think of as modern Turkey, including the Lycus Valley and the cities of Colossae, Hierapolis, and Laodicea, like the book of Colossians. That's when that all happened, was when Paul was centered in Ephesus. Now, around A.D. 56, which is about 4 years prior to this letter, things began to change in Ephesus. The tide began to turn. And especially there was the unions had difficulty with Paul. One union in particular, it was the idol union. The idol, not the guys that aren't working union, but idol, the guys that make the idols. They had a hard time with Paul because people were coming to Christ and they stopped worshiping idols. Their business was drying up. It'd be kind of like if revival broke out in America and all the pornographers were going out of business because nobody was buying their stuff. Wouldn't that be cool? Or all the liquor stores or the drug dealers would all be having to get other jobs. Wouldn't that be amazing? Not because they're thrown in jail, but because people are coming to Christ. Well, that's what was happening in Ephesus. And so the idol maker union guys kind of stirred everybody up, and a near riot broke out, and the church decided, well, we better put Paul in some place that's safe, so they shipped him out of town. And so Paul left Ephesus. He left Ephesus, and he and a group of fellows traveled up north around, this is the area of Macedonia, Philippi and Thessalonica, went down to the southern, this is Greece nowadays, the southern area that is called Achaia, where the city of Corinth was. It was in Corinth that Paul writes to the book of Romans at this point. And then they decided they want to go to Jerusalem, which is down here, somewhere around Philip's foot. Down here is where Jerusalem was. And so they begin the trek, but they decide to go back around this way, and they want to kind of visit everybody again. So they come back around here, And Paul's got this group of guys around him, and they're on their way to Jerusalem. It's in Jerusalem that Paul will get arrested, that Paul will be accused of defiling the temple in Jerusalem, which was silly, it was baloney. And then Paul ends up in prison in the land of Israel for a couple of years, and then he gets shipped to Rome for his appeal, and that's where Paul is right now. He's in Rome, which is up here somewhere. And he's waiting his appeal, and he's writing some letters meanwhile. But he's not alone. Paul's got some buds with him. And as he traveled this area of the world, he had a group of guys around him, his disciples, the guys, the people he was training for ministry. You get kind of like a Polaroid shot of them. Now, this is them at the Great Wall of China. I'm sorry, that's the wrong Polaroid. But you get kind of a group picture of them in the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 20, verse 4, it says, "And Sopater of Berea accompanied him to Asia, and also Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians." See, there's Thessalonica. This is the trip back around here. It mentions Gaius of Derbe and Timothy. Both Gaius and Timothy were from the area we would call the Galatian area, which is over here from the city of Derbe. And Tychicus and Trophimus of Asia, actually probably more specifically Ephesus, that came out of the Ephesian church. These are some of his buds who travel with him, some of the people that he's discipling and training for ministry. Pay attention to these names. You're going to see them in our text this morning. Why? Because some of them are still with Paul. Some of them have hung with him all the way through the jail and all the way to Rome as he's waiting his appeal. You're going to see them 4 years after this time. You're going to see that some of these guys are still with Paul in Rome. Now, when you look at this part of the chapter, this part of the book of Colossians, some of you who have dared to read your Bibles, when you get to this place in the book of Colossians, you see a bunch of names and you go, okay, turn the page, let's get on to the next book. Resist that temptation. Because there's more than just a list of names here. These are fellows who are the backstory to the New Testament. These are the guys who hung out with Paul. These are the guys who would be used in future years in the church. These are you. Just like you. If you play detective, you can learn some of the things about some of these fellows. On to our text, verse 7. He mentions Tychicus, a beloved brother, faithful minister, and a fellow servant in the Lord, will tell you all the news about me. I am sending him to you for this very purpose, that he may know your circumstances and comfort your hearts. Tychicus, or actually his name is in the Greek is Tukikos. We always pronounce it wrong in English. But I don't know if that name, does that name sound familiar with the list of names we were reading? It should, because this was one of the guys from Asia, from the city of Ephesus, which is the area where Colossae is from. Tychicus is the guy who carries the letter from Paul in prison in Rome to the Colossians. He's the delivery guy. He's not really a FedEx driver. He doesn't really work for UPS. Does not work for the post office. But this is the guy who delivers the letter. You find out, actually, the guy's got a bundle of letters. He'll have another letter we'll talk about in a minute. If you want to do some extra credit work, look in the book of Ephesians, which was written at this same time, and you'll see Tychicus is mentioned in Ephesians 6:21. He's the guy who carries the letter to Ephesus as well. Why? Because that's like the center, that's like the main church, that's like the home church in that area. And so he's going to go to Ephesus, deliver their letter, then he's going to go on to Colossae and deliver their letter. And you're going to find out there's other places on his delivery route. Tychicus, he's one of Paul's buds. He's one of the guys on the journey. He mentions in verse 9, a fellow named Onesimus. It's not one Simus. If you're reading through this, I know some of us will say, oh, no, one Simus. No, it's Onesimus. He's called a faithful and beloved brother who is one of you. In other words, he's from Colossae. They, Onesimus and Tychicus, will make known to you all the things which are happening here. Happening where? Where is Paul right now? Rome. He's in prison. They're going to fill you in on what my life is like in prison in Rome. These two fellows, Tychicus and Onesimus. Onesimus, his name means profitable or useful. That's kind of interesting. If you just read the book of Colossians and you just dare to look at this name, Onesimus, you think, okay, he's just one of the good guys. He's a faithful and beloved brethren. He's one of you. He's from Colossae. Okay, that's cool. But wait, there's more. It turns out, you do a little more study, and in fact, if you read the book Philemon, that's the other letter that Tychicus is carrying. Not to a church, but to an individual, a fellow named Philemon. And in fact, as you do some study, you find out that Onesimus is a runaway slave. Paul here calls him a faithful and beloved brother. But if you pay attention, he's a runaway slave. He's a guy who quit his job and left the boss hanging dry and high for the high life. He wanted to run away to Rome, where the fast people move. He's a runaway. He's a quitter. He ran away. Must have got in trouble because he runs into Paul, who's in prison. And so while they're both sitting in the same jail cell, Onesimus, probably drying out from his long weekend binge, you know, whatever, and Paul in prison for telling people about Jesus, Paul leads Onesimus to Christ. He leads this man to Christ. And they get to talking. And Onesimus kind of tells him his story. You know, he left the boss. Might have actually taken some money to finance the journey to Rome. To Rome. And he, you know, might have taken some stuff, you know. And he says, Paul's thinking, that's kind of interesting. Colossae, huh? Hey, I got some friends in Colossae. I haven't been there, but I know some people in Colossae. Who do you know? Well, my boss was this guy named Philemon. And Paul says, you're kidding. You mean Philemon who does this and this? Yeah, that guy. Why, he's my friend. I know this guy. What a coincidence. Yeah, all the way to the other side of the world, and they run into each other. One of these strange coincidences. And as Paul spends time with Onesimus and teaching about Jesus and what it is to follow Jesus, Paul decides, you know what, Onesimus, you need to go back to your master and make things right. And so now Onesimus, growing in the Lord, is going to accompany Tychicus with this letter to make things right. That's a little bit of the backstory of what's happening here. Philemon, the boss. You find out in the book of Philemon, he's married to a gal named Apphia. They actually host the church in their home. Churches didn't meet in nice facilities like this. They met in homes. In fact, their son named Archippus, you're going to see his name in a few minutes, he's actually the pastor of the church. So see, Paul really does know these people. He knows these people. Interesting. In Paul's letter to Philemon, if you read it, you'll find out that Paul makes a plea to Philemon, hey, forgive this guy. He wants to make it right. Cool. Very, very cool. Let's move on. Verse 10. More people that Paul mentions. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, greets you. Does that name sound familiar? It probably could, hopefully, because you did read this in Acts chapter 20, verse 4. This is one of Paul's entourage that's with him all the time, Aristarchus. And with Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, about whom you received instructions, if he comes to you, welcome him. Mark, the cousin of Barnabas. Now, we actually know quite a bit about this fellow. He had his full name on his driver's license is John. I'm sorry, his chariot's license is John Mark. John is a Jewish name. Mark is a Latin name. Mark or John, sometimes he's called one or the other. He actually is a Jewish fellow. We're told he's the cousin of Barnabas. Barney. Now, Barney was the guy in the New Testament, was big purple monster, and he's the guy that did the love, I love you. No, it's not that Barnabas. You know who Barnabas was? Paul's first missionary partner. The first guys that braved the new world and went out and preached the gospel, that Barnabas, they're cousins. John Mark's kind of connected to the early church. In fact, his family was like in the inner circle. It's kind of like people, every once in a while you run into people who remember the early days at Calvary Costa Mesa. And I don't even mean the tent days. I mean even before the tent days. John Mark is kind of like that. Because the early church in Jerusalem, we talked about them meeting in houses, they met at his house. Actually, technically his mom's house. He was still living at home at the time. This is Acts chapter 12. You hear this. His mom's name is Mary. And the early church met at his house. In fact, you remember the story where Peter is arrested in prison? And the early church gets together and they pray, oh God, help Peter, please help him to get loose and free. And then remember the angel releases Peter in the middle of the night, the first automatic doors, you know, and they all open and Peter's like, what's all this? And Peter stumbles out and he goes to where the early church is meeting. And where are they meeting? They're meeting at John's mom's house. And that happened at John Mark's house. When Paul and Barnabas start their first missionary trip, and they launch out from the church at Antioch, Mark went along. He was a part of the team. But things got rough on Paul's mission trips. That's the thing about mission trips. They don't always go the way you plan. And sometimes things just, plans change, you know. Well, I thought we were going to stay in the Motel 6. No, we're sleeping in the park tonight, Mark. And they just calm down. Everything's going to be, but I'm not going to go. If we don't get to stay at Motel 6s, I'm not going any further. And whatever happened, we don't know what happened. But when they got to a place called Pamphylia, Mark had it. He was frustrated and he quit. He left for home. He left. Wasn't a little deal that he left. In fact, when Paul and Barnabas decide to do their second missionary journey and to launch out and to visit the old churches they've been to and even start some new things, they decide who's going to come with us. And Barney says, let's take Mark, my cousin. And Paul says, not on your life. I'm not taking that quitter. They argue, and they argue some more. And the great, awesome first missionary apostles of the world split. Big church split. And Barney takes Mark and goes one way, and Paul takes Silas and goes another way. Now we know that at some point, Mark reconciles with Paul. Because he's with him right now. As Paul is in Rome, in prison, Mark is there. Tradition tells us that Mark will spend some time with the Apostle Peter, possibly at this point in Rome. Tradition has it that Mark would write his gospel at Peter's side, possibly here at Rome. This is the guy who wrote the gospel of Mark, the quitter. At the end of Paul's life, Mark was in Ephesus with Timothy. We see that in 2 Timothy. Tradition has it that Mark would eventually go off to Alexandria, which is down in Egypt, and he would start a church there. And in A.D. 64, 4 years from this point, Mark will die for his faith. He will be martyred. The thing I want to talk about here is this. I want to call this redeeming the quitter. See, Mark has been a source of problems for Paul. And when Paul was counting on him, he quit. And don't get mad at Paul for being upset at Mark. He should be upset at Mark because Mark was a quitter. When Barnabas wanted to take his cousin along, it says, but Paul disagreed strongly since John Mark had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not shared in their work. When you're counting on somebody to be a part of the work and they throw in the towel, it's tough. Everybody else got to pitch in more and make up for the slack. And yet here, you find that Mark has been welcomed back. And in fact, at the end, at the very end of Paul's life, when he writes 2 Timothy, in 2 Timothy chapter 4, Paul says to his pal Timothy, he says, because Mark's with him, he says, get Mark and bring him with you, for he is useful to me for ministry. Paul's been working with Mark. He's given him a second chance. And he's seen that Mark has learned to be faithful. Paul can count on him. God can take people who have failed and help them become usable again. Some of us have some marks in our lives. You know what I'm talking about? Some of you have people in your lives who have quit on you, who have failed you. And I want to lovingly remind you, it ain't over. Some of you are marks. Some of you have failed. Some of you have quit. And I got news for you. It ain't over. God's not done with you yet. Is the sound up? Okay. In the movie Facing the Giants, I don't know if you remember this movie. It came out a couple years ago. It was a story about a Christian high school football team and their coach, whose name is Grant Taylor. In 6 years of coaching, Grant has never had a winning season. After realigning himself with God, Grant delivers his team a new philosophy, but he's going to need the help of one of his key seniors, a fellow named Brock. He's going to need Brock to learn not to quit. So watch this clip.
So, Coach, how strong is Westview this year?
A lot stronger than we are.
You already written Friday night that as a loss, bro?
Well, not if I know we can beat them.
Come here, Brock. You too, Jerry.
Boy, am I in trouble now?
Not yet. I want to see you do the death crawl again, except I want to see your absolute best.
What, you want me to go to the 30?
I think you go to the 50.
50? I can go to the 50 if nobody's on my back.
I think you can do it with Jeremy on your back. But even if you can, I want you to promise me you're going to do your best.
All right.
Your best.
Okay.
You going to give me your best?
I'm going to give you my best.
All right, one more thing. I want you to do it blindfolded.
Why?
Because I want you giving up at a certain point when you can go further. Get down. Jeremy, get on his back. Make it a good tight hold, Jeremy. All right. Let's go, bro. Keep your knees off the ground. Just your hands and feet. There you go. A little bit left. A little bit left. Stop in. There you go. It's going to be good effort. That way, Brock. You keep coming. There you go. It's a good start. A little bit left. A little bit left. There you go, Brock. Good strength. That's it, Brock. That's it.
Am I at the 20 yet?
Forget the 20. You give me your best. You keep going. That's it. No, don't stop, Brock. You got more to you than that.
Hey, Dad, just rest a second.
You gotta keep moving. Let's keep moving. Let's go. Don't quit till you got nothing left. There you go. Keep moving. Keep moving. Keep moving, Brock. That's it. You keep driving. Keep your knees off the ground. Keep driving. Your very best. Your very best. Your very best. Keep moving, Brock. That's it. That's it. That's it. Keep going. Don't quit on me. Keep going. Keep driving. Keep driving. Keep your knees off the ground. That's it. Your very best. Don't quit on me. Your very best. Keep driving. Keep driving. There you go. There you go. That's it. You keep driving. Keep your knees off the ground. Keep driving. Don't quit till you got nothing left. Keep moving, bro. That's it. That's it. That's it. Keep going. I want everything you got. Come on. Keep going.
It hurts.
Don't quit on me. Your very best. Keep driving. Keep driving. There you go. There you go.
He's hitting
me. I know he's hitting you.
Strength.
And you negotiate with your buddy to find more strength, but don't you give up on me, Brock. You keep going, you hear me? You keep going, you're doing good. You keep going. You not quit on me. You keep going.
It hurts.
I know it hurts. You keep going. You keep going. It's all hard from here. 30 more steps. You keep going, Brock. Come on. Keep going.
Burn.
And let it burn.
Burn.
It's all hard. You keep going, Brock. Come on. Come on. Keep going. You promised me your best. Your best. Five more, come on, Brock, come on.
are the most influential player on this team. If you walk around defeated, so will they. Don't tell me you can't give me more than what I've been seeing. You just carried a 140-pound man across this whole field in your arms. Brock, I need you. God's gifted you with the ability of leadership. Don't waste it.
Coach?
Can I count on you? Yes.
Coach?
What is it, Jeremy?
I want 160.
Probably seen that clip 10, 15 times, and powerful parable, powerful story. Did you notice the other boys watching? You know, his whole thing at the end was, I need you to be a leader because they're watching you. Whether you think that you're a leader or not, people are watching you. They are. And when we quit too early, they'll do the same. When they watch us struggle and endure, it will give them the courage to keep going. I like the idea with the blindfold, because Brock thought maybe he could do, see earlier in the movie he does 10 yards. And so he thought, well, I could probably do 20. And the coach challenged him to 50. He did 100. Sometimes we sell ourselves a little bit too short. And we think, I just can't do it anymore. Maybe. But why don't you wait until you're in the end zone? Wait till you cross the goal line. The goal line, beloved, is heaven. Don't quit. And you know what? Maybe some of us have quit too early. You know what? It's not over. Look at Mark. Look what God went on to do through him when he learned to stop quitting. Can you learn anything from these names? I think so. Let's look at a few more names. He mentions Jesus, who is called Justice. Now, this isn't Jesus Christ. This is just another guy named Jesus, because Jesus was a common name in those days. And so they call him Jesus, who's called Justice, just to make sure that's not the other Jesus. These are my only fellow workers for the kingdom of God who are of the circumcision. They have proved to be a comfort to me. In other words, these are my Jewish fellows on my leadership team, is what he's saying. And they've been a comfort, he says. Verse 12, he mentions Epaphras, who is one of you, a bondservant of Christ, greets you, always laboring fervently for you in prayers, that you may stand perfect and complete in all the will of God. We've seen this fellow before, because this is the guy we saw back in chapter 1. This is the guy who started the church. Just a guy. We're not told that he is the awesome, almighty apostle Epaphras. He's just a guy from the Ephesian church who went out to share his faith and started churches in three cities. It says he was laboring fervently for you in his prayers. The word that's translated laboring fervently, it's a single Greek word, agonizomai. We get our word agony from it. That's maybe I should just stop there. That gives you an idea of what laboring fervently means. It's a word that talks about competing in the Olympic Games. It's reaching for the goal. It's endeavor with strenuous zeal. This is what this guy did in prayer. This is not what he did on the church work day and laying, you know, pouring concrete, whatever. This is what the guy did in prayer. He says, verse 13, I bear him witness that he has a great zeal for you and those who are in Laodicea and those in Hierapolis. Laodicea and Hierapolis were the other cities in the valley where Colossae is, the Lycus Valley. And he says, I bear him witness. He's got zeal, excitement of mind, ardor, fervent of spirit. This guy's on fire. How did Paul know that he was on fire? Because of how he prayed. I think you can make a connection with being on fire and your prayer life. I kind of think really being on fire is impossible if you don't have a prayer life. Some of us look at the prayer life as being optional. It's just for the super spiritual. You know what? It's not, gang. You start praying, God will start using you. James says the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. On to verse 14. He talks about Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas greet you. Luke, his name means light giving. This is the guy that wrote some books. You might have read some of his books. They're on the bestseller list because they're in the Bible. This is the guy that wrote the Gospel of Luke. This is the guy that wrote the Book of Acts. He's a Gentile. He's an assistant of Paul, and he's a physician. So I guess we could say he's a physician's assistant. I don't know. He's a doctor. He's a physician. He's the only Gentile to write any of the books in the New Testament. At the end of Paul's life, when everyone else has either been sent out to do ministry or some have betrayed Paul, and Paul's sitting alone waiting his execution, there's only one person in the cell with him, Luke. Luke. Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas greet you. Okay, Demas. His name means governor of the people. It's a shortened form of the name Demetrius. Demetrius. He's with Paul and he sends his greetings. At the end of Paul's life, something has happened to Demetrius. Paul writes in 2 Timothy, he says, Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, and has departed for Thessalonica. Just a short little thing here about Demas at the very end of Paul's life. Demas, it looks like, doesn't finish well. He's abandoned the ministry. He's abandoned Paul. And for Demas, we're given a little hint at why. Because he loved this world a little too much. He was a guy who liked his stuff. He was a worldly guy. And when we look at some reasons why some of us quit too early, here's one reason some of us quit too early is because we like certain things more than we love the Lord. Mentions verse 15. Greet the brethren who are in Laodicea, that's that other city across the valley, and Nymphas and the house that is in his the church that's in his house. The church in Laodicea met at the house of Nymphas. And verse 16, now when this epistle is read among you, see that it is read also in the church of the Laodiceans, so that you likewise read the epistle from Laodicea. Now, Paul didn't send copies. I have a feeling he knew that this was good stuff. You know, at the end of this thing, he's like, oh, that's good. That's really good. I think some people ought to read this, you know. And so he sends some little instructions here to the Colossians. He says, and when you're done with this, make a copy, you know, put it on the Xerox machine, you know, and copy the thing off, fax it to some friends, send it to the church in Laodicea. And in fact, you're going to find that they've got a letter that they're going to send to you. Make sure you read their letter as well. Now, what's this? Where is the letter to the Laodiceans? Do you see that in your Bible? It's right after the book of, actually, we don't have a letter titled the Laodicean letter. Two suggestions. Some have suggested that actually the letter to the Ephesians is the letter to Laodicea. Because as we've seen, the same guy is delivering all the letters, and it's very possible that the letter to the Ephesians was going to go to the Laodiceans first, and then they were going to swap. That's one suggestion. Could be. Interesting idea. The other theory is that we just don't have that letter. Somebody used it in the bottom of the parrot cage, you know, or something, and it got thrown out by mistake or something. I don't know. Or remember that story about the young executive sticking the thing that was he thought was in the copier and it got went into the shredder? Remember that story? Maybe that's what happened. I don't know. Verse 17. Say to Archippus, take heed to the ministry which you have received in the Lord that you may fulfill it. Archippus, he's the fellow who's the pastor at the church. Verse 18. This salutation by my own hand, Paul. Remember my chains, grace be with you all. Amen. Now see, we actually got that, we got a copy of that. There's Paul's handwriting, so you two can forge his checks. No, that's a different Paul. Paul dictated his letters. He probably spoke faster than he could write. He also had some problem with his eyes. And so he's dictating most of this stuff, but his custom was that sometimes at the end of the letter, he would just sneak in a little thing with his own writing on it. And so that's the idea about this last little phrase. By the way, this is my handwriting here. Now, just want to go back to verse 17 and just end here. Say to Archippus, take heed to the ministry which you have received in the Lord that you may fulfill it. I know it sounds like I've got a one-point message today, and that's right. Same message. Different verse, same message. We saw that God can use a quitter and redeem him and give him a different chance. In God's word, and we see that Demas quitted. Here we see a message to Archippus, don't quit. God gave you something to do, be sure that you do it. Over the years, this is one of my special verses. This verse. I don't know if you've ever... Do you ever do that? Do you ever read your Bible, and as you're reading, and then suddenly a verse like jumps out at you, and it slaps you in the face, and you go, whoa, where'd that come from? And you think, wow, it's almost like it sounds like God's speaking this to me. Do you ever have that experience? Do you ever have that in the Scriptures? This is one of those verses for me. This one has a personal thing to me. Because I remember more than a few times, years and years and years ago, being so discouraged. I remember when we left the Baptist church thinking God's called me to be a pastor and we're going to do the Calvary Chapel thing. And then like for like 3 weeks, I didn't teach a single Bible study. I was like, thought I was going to die. And finally started a home Bible study just because I had to do something, you know, just to get it out of my system. Cause that's what I do. That's my thing. And I remember when we started our big whopping Bible study over on Canterbury Court, and it was me and Deb and I think two friends. Well, yeah, eventually we had this couple who like fell in love and then ended up getting married, you know, Nancy Carroll and Chris Burrows, you know, and they remember those days. But that's when it got much bigger, like 10 of us or something. I don't know. But I remember just four of us. And then the other couple calls and says, we're busy tonight. You know, I remember getting discouraged. I thought you called me. And I remember this verse being one of the things that jumped out at me. And I don't know why that happens. I look at Archippus. And maybe this is just like my dyslexia Now watch, follow this. Look at this word. Archippus, you stare at it long enough. And after a while, it's just kind of like... You see that? So I look at that verse and I say, it says rich in there. Take heed to the ministry which you have received in the Lord that you may fulfill it. I'm going to pass this friend of a verse onto you. God is not finished with you. He is not. He simply is not. Because you are still alive and breathing and kicking, I know that you haven't crossed the goal line yet. You're not in the end zone yet. It is not time to quit. Paul wrote to the Philippians, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. You might be discouraged. You might think that life hasn't turned out the way you thought it would. Well, welcome to reality. I'll bet if I took, how many of you, life has not turned out the way you thought it would? Come on, come on. Now look around. Some of you are discouraged. You are not alone. And the rest of you, you can leave quickly because we're about to shoot the rest of you. We're going to shoot you because
you optimistic people, you.
Or else we'll say cynically, oh, well, you'll find out one day. You know, something like that. Look, you may feel like a failure, but I am learning. I'm kind of growing up, I think. I'm beginning to learn that what I think are the failures are the very things God uses to mold me and shape me. I wish he would learn to use like hot fudge sundaes to mold me and shape me. But the problem is they mold me this way. They don't chisel away at stuff. It's the difficulties that I go and endure and not quit